Welcome to the Week in Sports Cars and the Marshall Pro Podcast presented by Cooper Tires and Bell Racing Helmets USA. This month, my friend Graham Goodwin, I'm speaking to you from here inside the media center at the Indianapolis Motor Speedway on a Thursday morning as a press conference is going on in front of me with Sam Schmidt, IndyCar team owner, who is running former DTR star Robert Wickens. And you might also hear the IndyCar two-seater going round at 200-plus miles per hour with one Mario Andretti behind the wheel. So my morning's going fairly well, mate. How's yours?
Oh, well, good afternoon, everybody, from what is an extremely sunny UK. It's delightful to be back at home now after a couple of weeks on the road with Spa for WC and then Monza this past weekend for the ELMS. Going very well. Just looking forward to a bit of, relative downtime before we get into the chaos that is the Le Mans 24 Hours test day and then race week, but lots and lots going on in the background.
Well, you mentioned the word chaos, and I feel compelled to admit two of the dumber things from my youth. These are things that made my parents and my mother in particular realize they had a child that was going to need help. I remember seeing the word chaos in print somewhere when I was maybe 6 or 7 and asked my mother what chaos was, and she just gave me that look like, oh man, maybe we need to make another one of these and pray that it comes out better. The best all-time one though, Graham, the one, this is again of the many reasons you all take pity on me. We were at a little five and dime store and I was picked up, I believe it was a issue of Mad Magazine, a little comedy magazine, and I asked my mother, no joke, I was read whatever it was, I asked my mother what the word eidoit was, and she looked at it, and she looked at me and said, do you mean idiot? When you get the word idiot wrong, I think that just says a heck of a lot about who you are. So whenever I'm having serious bouts of mental fartery, the word eidoit starts to come out.
Well, so, I can't better that one, mate. My best one comes from Goodwin Jr. James, my son, now 30 years old, as a wee babe when his grandparents came around on a Sunday morning and obviously loved his grandparents, running around in his pyjamas. And then you suddenly have that moment you think, what is he saying? He must have been 2, maybe. And we couldn't work it out. It sounded appalling. It sounded like a very bad word beginning with F and ending in G. Trawler. Trawler as in fishing boat, round and round and round. It was, I kid you not, 6 months later when we realized his reaction to something he was watching on the TV was fat controller. Was Thomas the Tank Engine. Bless him. He'll never escape that one. Bless him. How's your week been, sir?
Well, it has been well. We will have a little bit of sports car-ish news here, and news is maybe heavily overstating things. I've heard that our friends Ricky Taylor, winner of the most recent IMSA WeatherTech Sports Car Championship race for Acura Team Penske, and his young American teammate Dane Cameron, who finished second at Mid-Ohio, they will be here in Indy for qualifying weekend as guests of Roger Penske. These are two young drivers that I have been railing on for years, need to be considered for an open wheel ride, given a one-off something, because they both have the talent to play here in IndyCar. These are both young champions in sports cars, but with no disrespect to sports car grade talent, these are kids that could and should also be winning races at 230 miles an hour around Indianapolis and other tracks. So they'll be here, and I am hoping that I'm going to give Roger a little bit of a nudge and say, come on, brother, we need to at least let the boys go play for a weekend. We have Elio Castroneves here doing one-off in at the Indy 500. Or I should say he's doing the month of May with Roger in between his new full-time sports car gig with Acura Team Penske. And we had the first official laps. That would be on Tuesday from Scuderia Corsa as an IndyCar entrant with Oriol Servia. That deal being brokered by Le Mans winner and Sweden's finest bon vivant, Stefan Johansson, a long relationship with Giacomo Mattioli, owner of Scuderia Corsa, two-time IMSA GT Daytona champion running this year, Cooper McNeil in the WeatherTech-sponsored Ferrari 488 GT3, and his teammate, two-time champion Alessandro Balzan in IMSA. So great to see Scuderia Corsa branching out into IndyCar. This is a one-off only at the moment, Graham, but Giacomo has said that he is interested in seeing whether doing more would be feasible. So they're partnered with yet another IMSA entrant, also a longtime IndyCar entrant in Bobby Rahal with the Rahal Letterman Lanigan team. So anyways, wonderful, truly wonderful to see the Scuderia Corsa logo on the front wings of the car and on the upper portion of the tub. And as probably the only one of either the only journo here, maybe two, who actually knows who Giacomo Mattioli is, I'll look forward to seeing him and interviewing him tomorrow when he lands to talk about this adventure. So some fun stuff on that end. Excellent. Not a huge week news-wise over here, admittedly. I've heard a couple rumblings about an opinion piece that I wrote not too long ago about IMSA needing to split its prototype points structure and bring an end to its BOPing of DPIs and P2s. So might talk about that a little bit later, but I do know that, A, you have some really good things developing on the Le Mans entry front. This is work being done by you and your good family at dailysportscar.com. Please check out dailysportscar.com. But what else do you think we should get into coming off of a busy weekend for you? Actually, just a busy stretch for you. You've been traveling like a madman.
It's been cool. It's been a long, you're right, a couple of long weekends, WC at Spa, but followed up with a long road trip from the UK to Italy. Rather bizarrely bumped into one Jenson Button as we queued to get onto the train at the Channel Tunnel. And Jenson was on his way to test for the first time the SMP Racing BR1 LMP1 car that he will race at the Le Mans 24 Hour. We'll come to that in just a moment. Then on to Monza, Templar Speed, wonderful, wonderful place. Great weather for the most part as well, for another great weekend for the European Le Mans Series. 18 LMP2 cars on that grid this past weekend.
Wow.
And some cracking stuff going on too. The news I think that's going to dominate, though, is all going to be about the big race to come. It's about the Le Mans 24 Hours. And oddly enough, a piece that's been running on Daily Sports Car a couple of 3 hours after this podcast is recorded, MP, will talk about who will likely be there and who won't likely be there. After Spa, we had five cars that looked to be in some doubt for whatever reason for the Mon 24 Hours, and oddly enough, all of them were LMP1 cars.
Yeah.
Of the 10. So let's go through that, because I'll give a flavour of what we've come to and why we've got there. Ginetta will be there,
okay,
with both cars.
On track, or just
on
looking
track.
Pretty?
Just looking pretty as well, but on track, and we'll be testing this side of the Le Mans 24 Hours. But I had a long chat with Lawrence Tomlinson from Ginetta, in bullish mood. Whatever the ins and outs of what's going on with the financing, those two cars will be on the grid, which is good news for all that love fine things from Yorkshire, aside from tea and, grit and rain. That's those. BR1, of which there are three. Let's deal with SMP Racing first. It's a video blog, actually, from Jenson Button, Just Broken, which shows JP on track at Manicor for that test. When we chatted, he was, I have to tell you, unaware of the blowover for Matevž Sezakian. Matevž, by the way, raced the weekend at Monza. He's absolutely fine. I understand from a well-placed source at SMP Racing that they are fully aware of the cause of the incident for Matevž. There may well be a minor change made to the low downforce aero package, but combination of things to actually add to what we already knew there. the liftoff happened on track. All the theories about it being a curb or it being a painted line, no. It happened on track. May well have actually had something to do with the Toyota that was just ahead of it on the road. But the team say that they do understand it and that work is underway make sure that should not happen again. So those two cars should be there. There has been a bit of confusion about the availability of a spare for the rather comprehensively deconstructed 17. S&P Racing do have a spare chassis for the AER version of the car. So both of the S&P Racing cars, unless something comes out from the final car I'm about to describe and the investigation underway there, at the moment plan to be there with the planned driver squads and a two-car effort. That leaves us with the number 10 Dragon Speed team. The awful accident that befell Pietro Fittipaldi, I gather back now in the US.
Yeah, actually I was going to mention, he is rehabbing here in Indianapolis under the care of Jim Leo at Pit Fit. Jim's Pit Fit training facility is one where, good Lord, I think more than half of IndyCar drivers and member sports car drivers rely on them for lots of love. But even better, here in about an hour and a half, young Pietro is going to join us in the media center to give us an update. So it might be the one and only time, bad joke alert ahead, I could beat him in a foot race. But I will be more than happy to see our young pal. And anyway, so good to see at least, you know, here relatively short after a major, major accident, he's already wanting to come out and see folks and let everyone know that he is on the road to recovery.
Well, please do let him know. A massive amount of love in the paddock at both Spa and Monza. Lots of people coming and asking me how he was from just lots and lots of prior racing he's done across in Europe. Do let him know that we're all thinking of him, MP. There is an investigation underway into both the cause and indeed the outturn of that shunt. Lots of unhappiness around the injuries that were caused in what was a very heavy, but these days, not that unusual accidents. The issue for the team, though, is that that was a unique car. There is no spare tub for that car. What's going to happen? Well, the honest answer is right this second, I do not know. I think there's every chance we will see a request for force majeure and a transfer to the team's second LMP2 Orica. They are, of course, a full-season WEC entrant. They've already got the Orica in the full championship, and I think in these circumstances it is distinctly possible that we'll see that force majeure request granted. Why do I think that's a possibility? You then have to go and look at who are the remaining options that might replace that or any other car at the Le Mans 24 hours. You will recall, MP, a list of 9 reserve cars. Of those 9, I believe we are left now with a list of likely 3. I know from talking with teams and other sources that the first reserve, KCMG, despite some sources suggesting they've been told to be ready to come along to the test day, that's not the case. They are out of time with their principal sponsor. The same, I believe, is true with Racing Engineering, the fourth reserve. The Repsol sponsorship, I'm afraid, is out of time there too. You mentioned Scuderia Corsa. We've already seen Cooper McNeil transfer with the WeatherTech sponsorship to JMW Motorsport, so that effectively is a defunct entry. Be interested to see what the team owner actually has to tell you on that front. The same is true with Tracy Krohn et al., who've moved to Eurasia. ARC Bratislava, in the very early hours,
team of all time.
Absolutely. Made it very clear they were so, so, so unhappy not being there that they probably would never darken the race's doors again. And your and my good friend Brian Alder has had his P2 car sold from underneath him. That leaves us then with a trio of cars available. The Spirit of Race Ferrari, Duncan Cameron from the UK, his 55 Ferrari. I've completely forgotten who the second one was. Oh, that's right. It's the High Class Racing Dallara P217. A full-season ELMS entry in its second year.
Should we announce our Pruitt and Goodwin low-class racing entry?
I think, you know, no class. I mean, okay. It's but the third and only remaining confirmed reserve listed entries, the second edX sport car. This is the Ligier JS P217. I think that's the trio, and here's the kicker: none of them have so far been invited to the test day.
Wow.
So I think that indicates that that's where we are currently. It's going to be a very, very late call indeed if there's going to be any change. That test day is in under 3 weeks' time.
Wow.
It's 2 weeks' time, in fact, isn't it? It's on Sunday the 3rd of June. So I think the biggest clue of all is, have those teams been stood up to come to the test day? I have spoken to two of the three of them, and they have not. So my guess is, right now, today, the ACO are counting on the five entries, all five of them, that were in some doubt or some questions hanging over them, to be at the Le Mans 24 Hours test day, and then following on from that at Le Mans Race Week itself.
I know this would be considered a duh obvious thing, but it is still a little bit of a surprise to me, Graham, that with all of the changes that have gone on, especially up top in prototype configuration for LMP1, LMP1 hybrid and such, we knew that going into this year's Le Mans, we were going to have one manufacturer. We were expecting this bevy of strong privateer non-hybrid entries that obviously went a little bit sideways at Spa. Still, again, I'm still just a little bit surprised thinking about Le Mans on its own as a race where 3 weeks out here from testing, there's still some pretty significant question marks. We know, you know, who's been invited to come to scrutineering, and, you know, we know a lot of these things from a procedural standpoint, but it's been a while, I could say at least, where it's felt like, I'm not 100% who's going to be driving what, or what exactly is going to, be allowed through to make it into pit lane to offload. Interesting. Again, maybe not a total shocker, but still just a bit of a surprise. It seems like the state of flux is continuing this late.
I sort of share your concern. I think the realities of life when you're developing an LMP1 program rather than running a effectively stock LMP2 car have been a slow burn for some. The irony, I guess, here is that this is three separate teams in all in completely different sorts of issues. But the outturn of it is that it looks to me as if we're going to have a pretty spectacular grid, the like of which we've not seen at Le Mans for quite some time. The addition of Jenson Button, the addition of Juan Pablo Montoya, who had a seat fitting, by the way, the day after Monza at Monza with United Auto Sports. No testing there. They moved on and tested elsewhere.
Not like I'm one to talk, but the phrase Juan Montoya and seat fitting, those are things that have not necessarily collided in conversation before. But I'm not one to talk.
I'll leave you to have that conversation.
Anytime I can give JPM a hard time, you got to take it.
But absolutely right. But it's coming together in a way which, look, is there a degree of actually reasonably righteous cynicism about the prospects for Toyota to dominate this? Yes. However, plenty of excitement about what actually happens behind. And the phrase I have heard most often when describing the Le Mans 24 Hours this year is, yeah, you know, we all know the deck is stacked, but how many times have Toyota come second? So let's wait and see. I must admit, I'm kind of looking forward to it. I think this one could be a bit of a corker. GT could be absolutely amazing. Lots of testing, by the way, going on this week at Monza, including many of the GT teams. A interesting detail change for the BMW that's on track there, with some changes to the way in which the air is handled at the rear of the car. Pipo Derani in his first run in the air, of course, a Ferrari. Ford are there, Porsche are there. It's just beginning to kind of get to that point where we get excited about what comes in the month of June, in exactly the same way as, I know, you know, your year revolves around the month of May as well, MP.
Well, to be honest, it's the month of May and June. I am one of the most fortunate folks in our industry, because whether you're a fan of sports car racing first and therefore declare Le Mans as the world's greatest race, a fan of IndyCar racing and declare the Indy 500 as the world's greatest race. For more than a decade now, I've been fortunate to cover both as a reporter. I've been able to work at one as a team member, engineer, whatever, at Indy for 20 plus years now. So I'm just this guy that has a pretty amazing life of getting to circumnavigate both. And there aren't many of us, at least from my side of the pond, who are able to do that. So I'm a pretty happy guy. And speaking of happy, Graham Goodwin, this May, the Marshall Pruitt Podcast is supported by our friends at Bell Racing Helmets USA, proven since 1954, a couple years before you were born. Bell helmets have been the choice of champions when it comes to state-of-the-art head protection. Designed for professional and amateur drivers, Bell is synonymous with safety, innovation, performance, and engineering excellence. And if we look back here at the Indy 500, 19 of the 35 entered drivers are Bell athletes, which is a fairly impressive number to me. So if you want to learn more about Bell helmets, visit bellracing.com. Where should we head next? And I ask that while knowing we have some great Q&A that has come in.
Well, I'm going to say one thing.
We have about 40 minutes left before I have to go run and do other things.
Well, let's say thank you and au revoir to Guy Smith, who announced just yesterday that he'll be stepping down as a Bentley factory driver.
Yes.
So he will still be part of the Bentley family. I am sure we're going to still see him helping out in some of the customer efforts. But in terms of the factory efforts, Guy had the conversation with Brian Gush in the off-season, told him that this was where he was in his career, that he wanted to drive the new car. He did that in the opening round of the Blancpain Endurance Series, and he will step down after this weekend. I'll be there to see him at Silverstone in round two of the Blancpain Endurance Series for 2018. What a marvellous servant he has been. It seems a long, long time, MP, since I bumped into him. In one of the fan zones, actually, at the Petit Le Mans, my very first visit there. And it wasn't looking great for his career. He was thinking that there was something on the horizon with a new project that he wasn't really quite sure of. Turned out that was the Bentley Le Mans program that served him well, and he came out as a Le Mans winner. But Guy, an absolute gent, exactly the kind of guy that a brand like Bentley should be looking for and wanted. And what a great servant to the brand he's been.
And I remember learning of him intently before his sports car career, when he was over here in America competing in the Indy Lights series, hoping to become an IndyCar driver. So, we're not losing him, thankfully, but it's strange to think of someone as young as Guy, as distinguished as Guy, effectively calling time on his career. I'm not saying we won't see him ever in anything again, and I don't think he has closed the door completely.
No, he's not. No.
But in terms of being a regular factory Bentley driver, it's rare that you get yet another act at this stage of one's career with another brand or something else, but I'm hoping we still get to see Guy enjoying driving, but also he's just one of the great, great people that we come across in the sports car racing paddock. Always a big smile, something fun or warm to share. And, how's this? There are many people in the sports car paddock who are not additive. They drain your life. They drain your happiness, whatever it might be. Guy has always been someone who just gives and brings a lot of energy to whatever he does. So I'm hoping that we will be able to see him for many years to come.
Good stuff. Well, we are getting to the stage where it is getting close, and as I'm talking to you, MP, what's actually happening is we are getting the list of teams and drivers being issued right now for the Le Mans 24 Hours and for the test day. And indeed, on that list is the Dragon Speed car at the moment with their BR engine BR1 Gibson. We know that that's not likely to happen unless they've turned around a new car very, very quickly, and some interesting driver changes as well coming through. So we'll keep an eye on that one. That'll be on Racer and Daily Sports Car as soon as myself, yourself and Stephen Kilby can put fingers to keyboards. We'll see how we go forward from there. I think it's about time we got to the questions, isn't it?
Should we stop yapping? That's the sign to stop yapping.
Well, questions, I think you're becoming a firm favourite of mine with this podcast. Not that I don't like talking to you about everything,
questions.
MP. But the,
oh, we get questions. We get
questions.
Questions every day. All right.
Let's start off with Tom Pendergrass. Is the fact that there's a separate class for older GT3 cars in the N24 proof that a BOP-dependent class is fundamentally flawed? No. Is the answer. It's proof that there is demand for something at a rather lower budget level. I think what we've got is a number of teams that simply aren't at the level that they can afford to kind of invest in a brand new machinery. Am I concerned about the sustainability of the GT3 class moving forward? I very much am, but I don't think that's what it means, Tom. I think what it is they're just trying to broaden the appeal of the race. I think they're trying to get people into the position where they can be on that ladder to come forward into the higher class in future years, but not turn away people that are at the higher end of the clubby part of particularly German motorsport. That's where I think that is. Got a question here from Buddy Campbell. Could they ever reinstitute the Le Mans start? Obviously, they couldn't run to their cars, back the cars up against the pit wall, have their engines off 30 minutes before the start. We do that. We've done that for some little time. Before the cars come and grid up, the grid, as the drivers are presented, it may be, and with apologies, Buddy, you don't know where in the world you are.
The it would be in the issue, US.
Right, well, it may well be that they're not seeing that as part of the US TV content. So let's wait and see how that one actually comes out. It may well be, by the way, the guys that are listening and watching to the Velocity TV coverage will now probably have seen that it is actually using the WEC TV team. The staffing for that is already known for the Le Mans 24 Hours. It's going to feature most of the usual WEC TV team, with the exception of yours truly. I'll be on Radio Le Mans duty for the week, as is normal. But, buddy, they do that. It is a packed grid. It does make a spectacular sight. And if you possibly can make it over to see the race live, you'd be more than welcome. What else? Marshall and Graham, absent the past weeks, not acceptable, Mateus Longo. Question I wanted to ask since some time ago. With a profusion of single-seater drivers coming to endurance, do you think endurance competition can make them better, personally and professionally, because of the different spirits in terms of teamwork? Can single-seater drivers take some advantage from its kind of competition in the endurance world? Let's hear your side of those things, because I don't operate in the single-seater world. You do.
Mateus, I think you are on to something for sure. I spoke with young Indy Lights driver Pato O'Ward, who spent 2016, well, let me wind back a little bit, who spent formative years, and he's still very young, but in open wheel, coming up the ladder system. In 2016, he won the Pro Mazda Championship here in North America on the Mazda Road to Indy. 2017, didn't really have the budget to do much, did a couple of Indy Lights races to open the season, but was picked up by Performance Tech Motorsports full-time and competed with them in IMSA's PC category, where he was a complete revelation. Just destroyed, destroyed season long. They won all but the season finale. But long story short, while he and his teammates, James French, Kyle Masson, etc., were very quick, Pato was the absolute bunny rabbit of the group. So you would think coming back this year, now having impressed folks last year, was picked up by Andretti Autosport in Indy Lights. And speaking with Pato on this exact topic, Mateus, I said, hey, how did this year away in sports cars benefit you? And mind you, he's only 18, 19 years old, so he's still at the sharp end of the learning curve. But he said the amount of mileage is really the thing that helped him. And I think that is where hopefully more young drivers who have open wheel aspirations, whether it's Formula One or IndyCar, realize, Graham, that in endurance racing, and I do mean endurance, not sprint, you know, a Blancpain sprint event, a World Challenge sprint event, I don't believe those events are going to do anything for the young drivers. But when you can take a kid who, in, let's say, one weekend of open wheel racing is going to get maybe 3 hours of track time total, two maybe, depending, you know, a couple practice sessions qualifying in a race, that's a half hour to 45 minutes. That's wonderful. You're going to do that in more or less a single stint at Daytona. You are going to come out with so many miles, additional miles, additional hours of competition that you would just not have available to you in open wheel racing. That's the area where Pato said, you know, this is where I gained. Now all of a sudden, instead of me and 20 or 30 other open wheel cars blasting around for a half hour, I'm having to pass cars in different classes. I'm having to look in my mirrors to be mindful of faster cars as well. But most of all, Graham, I would say it's the crazy amount of decision-making opportunities that come through. Pass here, don't pass here. Does this guy see me? Does that guy not see me? What are his trends? What are her trends? A lot of things that go just beyond the typical junior open wheel attack and kill mindset. So I would say, Mateus, that if I am a young driver's father, coach, manager, whatever it is, I'm saying, what kind of endurance racing can we get you into? Because that is going to accelerate your learning curve way faster than just sticking an open wheel.
Absolutely. From my position, I think certainly the teamwork that is required for the sports car discipline, I think, can only be a good thing in terms of getting particularly maybe a younger driver to start to think about the dynamics that operate within a group of people. Certainly I've heard great things from a number of young guys coming out of single seaters, finding themselves in a GT or a prototype driver at a high level, and telling me that, you know, they've not given up on their single seater ambitions, but they go back more prepared in the way in which they can then work with the greater whole. It's certainly a very, very different atmosphere in a sports car team with two or three drivers would be with a single-seater team with, you know, with one driver with a team revolving around them. I think, you know, we've seen character come out in bucket loads in that situation. It's a great question, though. Who's next? A couple of questions here about the LMS. I'll grab these two if you don't mind, MP.
I've heard you cover that series.
I do, yes. Mike Dickinson says, able to attend the Saturday LMS events at Monza, disappointed by crowd size. What is it that people are doing to put more butts on seats? Couldn't go on the Sunday. His boy got sick on Saturday evening. Hope that's okay now. They do all sorts. There's reality. I think it is a big problem for anybody, not just in motorsport, but all sports, trying to keep crowd numbers up as the availability of other entertainment becomes easier, as people think more online, people think more about whether or not they're going to go to a shopping mall than a race circuit. But for ELMS, it's, what, €10 will get you into the paddock, will get you into pit lane, will get you now on the grid walk for the ELMS.
And for 15, you get a race seat.
For 15, yeah, absolutely.
For 20, you get a helmet and a suit.
But one thing I will tell you is this. I was chatting to the guys behind the British GT Championship, and one thing that they said that really surprised me is their numbers over the last couple of years are up, and not by a little bit. They're up pretty considerably. That we are beginning to see people come back out now to watch racing nationally. That's great. And, you know, and fingers crossed that will transfer into the more international series. I think there is a reality. We've certainly seen it reflected by what our friends at the WEC and the LMS are providing outside of come and sit in a grandstand, buy a burger, buy a program. They realise that if you're going to have a family together for the day, because of course it is going to be the full day if you go into an endurance race, you've got to do more. So let's wait and see. The other question is, EMS race at Monza, the situation behind the safety car with two United cars, one and two, given you couldn't overtake the car ahead until the start-finish line, could they theoretically have let the lead car go flat out? Well, the answer is yes, they could. They didn't, which was, I think, to their credit. There was also a situation, by the way, in that same incident where the two cars were incorrectly waved by the safety car, and indeed then had to slow down on the start-finish straight and allow the Jaguar safety car to overtake them to get back in line rather than having to reset again. Some fairly shonky driving standards up and down parts of the grid in the LMS, and I think there's going to be some questions asked about that. But, I think there is a reality that race control will keep an eye on something that is blatantly unsportsmanlike. But in that situation, where the cars are effectively under the control of the lead car, some little way before the line, there was every option to do that. I think to a degree, a little bit of it was done. But don't always presume, by the way, that the cars that race in the same colours, whilst they are operated by the same team, will necessarily be subject to team orders. Because in many, many cases, particularly in the Pro-Am areas of racing, it's a very different team. Mm. So the answer is, I think it's sporting conduct rather than the specific conduct of a safety car release that would come into hands there. Couple here for you, MP, and certainly the listenership, because that's who they are, I think have been absolutely rather taken by your think piece around splitting DPI and LMP2. David Titterbart, touching on your article, regarding splitting the two classes, the underlying issue, the difference between being a customer and OEM, and instead of splitting the classes, wouldn't it be better for IMSA to massage the DPI teams, provide package of LMP2 teams to use? We've got another one here asking how the talks, Michael Hogan, what was the outcome of the DPI manufacturer's talks with IMSA and separating the class? What's going on then?
Well, a couple things there. Great fun stuff to get in on. Say, first of all, what we're talking about here, at least my little thoughts, we're talking about a bridge solution. We have these new regulations coming in 2021. We know that IMSA has said there will be stability through 2022 stateside. But we also know that until we get there, there are a lot of things that are unbalanced related to how these two types of prototypes compete in the WeatherTech Sports Car Championship. So my suggestion was not necessarily a long-term one. It was more recognition of what isn't working right now and things that might be done to get us to a place where manufacturers are happy and want to stay involved in the series, and privateers want to stay involved in the series. And that's, despite many things we could get into on the technical front, Graham, that's really the underlying thought behind what I wrote. But keep in mind, I was by no means the first person to come up with this idea. This is something that DPI manufacturers and privateers have been pushing for in some way, shape, or form. Either make good on the promise that those of us who bought P2s can compete, have a legitimate shot at winning, or come up with something. And then on the flip side, you have the manufacturers with their DPIs saying, we're spending a ton of money here, and you keep pegging us back for reasons that seem to be getting a little bit severe, or I shouldn't say for reasons, to a degree that is getting very severe. So that was the general premise for those who might not have heard what we've discussed or what I wrote. Development-wise, I would say, Graham, I've heard rumor, not saying it's anything more than that, but I've heard rumor that there could be some buy-in on the concept of splitting in 2019. Not splitting as in we're going to come up with two different classes for prototypes, like we're actually adding a fourth class now, but just within the existing overarching prototype class, that they might indeed go towards awarding separate points to both and unshackling the DPIs from the constraints that have been in place with BOP. Is that our first usage? Possibly. Of BOP today. To try and slow them down to get them into a performance frame with the WEC P2s. But I mentioned this as a method to get to some answers. My biggest complaint that I wrote about when the DPI formula was launched is there was no mechanism in place by IMSA, no leverage given or granted or taken to compel DPI manufacturers to make customer models available. So we do have a situation, and I'm not so much criticizing them for their decisions. I would like to see more of a community-minded approach among the DPI manufacturers. But if you do look, the only teams that have DPIs are those that are either full factory efforts in Mazda Team Yost, Acura Team Penske. You have the customer-originated Nissan program, one that Tequila Patron ESM made happen with their dollars and inspiration. And then you have really the only place where you can not necessarily call them full factory on the Cadillac front, because these are independently owned teams, with Action Express Racing, their two cars, Wayne Taylor Racing, and their one, and Spirit of Daytona. But we do have a situation with those three teams, Graham, where Cadillac has decided you three are getting them. I don't want to get too much into back and forth on this, but I know another outlet that loves sports car racing every day of the year had published something from one of the senior brass at GM saying, no, we're making our Cadillacs available for purchase. And rather than look at the reality or talk to teams who've inquired about buying them, to then find out that no, actually, those really and truly are not readily available to purchase. There have been some folks who have taken that little article and run with it as if it's just the gospel. Well, the reality is, you have teams that have bought customer P2s that have said and gone on the record saying, we have sponsors that have said, if we can get a Cadillac, I've got the money. And they are not currently running Cadillacs. So this all comes back to, there's nothing in any of the agreements that I know of, Graham, that says if you are competing with a DPI, you must make X amount on top of however many factory cars you want to run with your factory team available for privateers to use. And that's where we kind of get ourselves into this conundrum. I don't know, to close, Graham, if you can compel a major global entity like General Motors. I don't know if a small sports car racing sanctioning body in Florida can force a global giant like GM to do anything it doesn't want to, or Mazda, or Nissan, or Acura. But I do think that looking at how we have a fairly unhappy situation right now, Graham, when these 2021 regulations come into play, and provided all of these manufacturers and maybe more are involved in DPI, I'd love to see some sort of greater communal mindset that if a Performance Tech, if a PR1 Matheson AFS Racing, if a JDC Miller wants to buy one, that at least that door is open without it being $1 trillion or just a bit of a shell statement. Yeah, sure, you could buy one, but we know we're never actually going to make it happen. So that's kind of where we're at.
Yep, that rather interestingly accords with exactly the question asked by, I think it's Ed Horace, about exactly that, about customer cars. It's certainly a question that's being asked, by the way, in relation to the new rules for LMP1 as well, about the availability, potential availability of customer cars. Let's finish with a couple of quickies, because I know you're running on time for commitments there in Indianapolis. Two quick ones. After a pretty awesome sounding N24, what do you think is the best sounding race on the planet, from James Counter? And we'll finish as well with
Adam Law.
Yeah. Yes. What major race for a friend of yours was the most satisfying? Westy finally getting his Rolex, Hartley knocking Le Mans off the list, Sato redeeming at Indy. By the way, it's a he or a she, a big fan, totally not in the witness protection program.
We've determined
they would say that, though, wouldn't they?
Yes.
It's an it.
It's an it.
Gender fluid. Gender
yes.
fluid?
Well,
fine. Okay.
Gender averse.
Fair enough. That's fair dues. Best sounding race on the planet. Well, depends where you're listening from. Okay, I'll give my answer really quickly here. Back in the day where the Radio Le Mans crew broadcast the race from the top of the tribunes, the main grandstand, I know of nowhere other than probably beneath the launch pad at Cape Canaveral that was louder. Absolutely astonishing sound there. And from that position, the sound of the Le Mans 24 Hours was absolutely awe-inspiring, absolutely amazing. We will not hear it's like again, because that broadcast position has been given over now to hospitality. There are other places, oddly enough, where it may be the grid you're familiar with, but it's just the acoustics. Bahrain's international circuit makes their sports car grids just sound extraordinary just because of the shape of the stands. And there was a particular stand, a low stand at Imola, where the sound as the cars come along the pit straight or out of the pits is utterly extraordinary. As an overall, you know, what's the best sounding? You know what? The GT3 cars are wonderfully different in their soundtracks. The current WEC grid is sounding better and better with more of the normally aspirated engines. The fabulous Porsches will have 10 of those 911 RSRs at the Le Mans 24 Hours. But a mixed grid, a mixed class grid of anything, I think is a wonderful thing to behold.
I would say that there is one location to me that is completely unique. I haven't come across anything like it. Open wheel sports cars domestically, internationally, and that is the Chateau Alain Hotel at turn 5, I believe it's 5, at Sebring, the hairpin, with the hotel as a backdrop but also a true acoustic instrument. It is like an amphitheater. If you're able to stand basically in the backside of the hotel, so as the cars come down to the braking zone and then make that hard right and accelerate away, their exhaust, as they accelerate away, is pointed at the Chateau Alain, and you get a number of fans who make their way there. And acoustically, Graham, it is just divine. So with those Porsche 911 RSRs, with the Gibson WEC V8s, with the Corvettes and the turbo Nissans and this, the Mobile in 12 Hours of Sebring, the anything at Sebring from that vantage point with that amphitheater created, the sounds are phenomenal. I've mentioned this, I believe, before here, that as a photographer, obviously I'm given access to just about everywhere at every racetrack, and the kink on the Mulsanne Straight, that is something where the sound and force of the cars going by, especially in the full-bore, fully subscribed LMP1 hybrid era, just ridiculous. And, you know, if we're talking eras, I would say the late 80s IMSA GTP class, with so much variety in engines, not just GTP, but also Camel Lights, GTO, GTU. It could be hard. It was hard to concentrate at times, Graham, because you're wanting to look at the cars, take them in, see the speed, appreciate the amazing drivers. There are a lot of times where you just want to close your eyes and listen, because having been there for it, that's my happy place. I'll go ahead and admit this. Finally, it's taken a couple months on the Weekend Sports Cars podcast, but that's my happy place. I just close my eyes and go to IMSA at wherever, and boy, those sounds are just, it's like a warm, comfy blanket of awesomeness.
And that, my friend, is why the podcasts you do of race sounds are just so popular. As for the second question, the one about those moments when friends or those that you follow most closely, there's been so many. One of the best things about racing is its unpredictability, of course. I'll give you one, and it's not a driver. it's a team, but in particular, it was a car, and it came last year. It came at the race we've just been to at Monza in the very last international appearance of the Ferrari 458 GTE in the hands of J&W Motorsports, a team that suffered the slings and arrows of outrageous fortune the previous year, losing out on the title. And it was the very last race for actually what was the very first customer car outside of AF Corsa, JMW's Ferrari 458 GTE, and won the GTE class in its very final race at Monza. What a great place for a Ferrari to win a race before they replaced it with their current 488, which then went on to win the next race at Le Mans 24 Hours. But that Monza weekend, it all just came together. It's a cracking little team. It's an amazing sounding car. And yeah, after the despair for that very close-knit family at JMW at the end of the season the previous year, where they had the title snatched from them in really cruel circumstances, to see the delights on their faces was a thing to behold.
Well, I will offer an answer that is one that is completely obscure to close the podcast here, but it's what came to mind first in sports car vein. Indy 500 would be among my many answers for drivers. This is a sports car podcast, so I won't go into that, but I'll just mention that when you have multi-class racing, three-ish drivers per car, podiums for, you know, a couple different classes, there are dozens of drivers up on a podium. And so while a victory or even a second or third could be very meaningful to them, I'll admit that the sheer numbers can get to a point where it's like, okay, it's hard to take in the true, you know, solo impact when you have, at least for me, when I see that. So that's when I see a Takuma Sato winning Indy, Tony Kanaan winning the Indy 500, and just seeing how much it meant to them, how much it had changed their lives, that's what comes to mind. But I'll go, if we're talking sports cars, I'll go to, I'm not sure the year exactly, it might have been 2004, 2005, at Laguna Seca. I was driver coaching for an old friend racing an SCCA amateur event in a spec racer Ford. So these are cars built by the Sports Car Club of America, big, heavy tube frame. They look like a matchbox car, frumpy open prototype with, you know, 115 horsepower on a good day. I mean, they're slow as bricks, but they're a relatively inexpensive and popular starting point for a lot of drivers. And my friend David K-A-Y, was never known for being the fastest in anything he'd driven. The Spec Racer Ford class, though, highly competitive, one of the most enjoyable each year at the SCCA National Runoffs. I believe there was some form of oversubscription for the class that weekend, and there was essentially a, I don't know if I want to say an alternates race, but a secondary race where however many of the fastest, the larger group ran, and David was part of the secondary race. And I don't remember if his lap times had him on pole or there or thereabouts, but he was in and among a field of, I don't know, a dozen or two cars, Graham, and he won. And this is someone who makes a living in Silicon Valley doing heady, brainy things. You would never mistake him for an athlete if you saw him. Just someone who enjoys motor racing, has always driven just for his own personal enjoyment, not, you know, no thoughts of grandeur on a professional, even an amateur level. And I'll just tell you, his son was there, I believe. Seeing someone who had raced for years and years and years and just grown accustomed to finishing 30th in a field of 40, 25th on a really good day, it was through these special circumstances with this extra race that they added on for some overflow cars. But just seeing David win, it was so touching, Graham, because this is not something he ever considered to be a possibility. In special circumstances aside, he got a little trophy or a medallion or whatever it was. and he came back to the paddock and was a winner in front of his son, which is something that had never happened before. I don't know if it's happened since, but that was just such a cool thing to see a man who made a lot of money doing things in boardrooms and was highly respected, you know, get in Silicon Valley. But for one day, you know, at a amateur event at Laguna Seca, he was a winner. And that was just so damn cool to see what that does to a human being and how that changes one's view on oneself, even if only temporarily. So that's what stands out for me.
That's what a great place that is to end, because for me, I said it before, I'll say it again, I'll continue to say it. It's about the people. It's about the human side for me. I love the cars. I love the racing. The teamwork is fantastic, but it's the human aspect that ticks all the boxes for me, and that's a cracking little story to end on. Sounds like you've got more excitement to come with the Tanno announcement in the background for you, MP. So that's us for the week, isn't it?
That is the week in sports cars with the Graham Goodwin of DailySportsCar.com. Graham's good work, Stephen Kilby's good work, young Mr. Arity. You can find that on DailySportsCar.com. You guys are also great in sharing your finer works with Racer.com. So all kinds of sports car goodness there. I'm on a little bit of a sports car reprieve with Open Wheel being my world here for the coming weeks, but we will be back next week. I don't know what we're going to talk about, but we're probably going to find something that amuses us. Thank you for all of your questions. Thank you to Cooper Tires for their season-long support and to Bell Racing Helmets USA for their month of May partnership. Mr. Goodwin, get some rest, because I know there's some little French jaunt coming up in your future. Not on mine. I will be home, but I know that you are going to need to recharge some batteries here. So thank you again, my friend, and look
always
forward
good
to another episode next week. Off we go.